The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media.
From the Knapsack File Studios in Burbank, California, I'm Ken Knapsack, and this is Life, joined again by my co-host, Owen Mugen.
Ah, Ken, good to see you, my man.
Good to be here.
How is that thing called life?
That thing called life, I'm in an interesting place with it.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'm in an interesting place with it, but good times, bad times, give me some of that.
Yeah. It's, I think Led Zeppelin had it right. Good times, bad times, you know I had my share.
You Zeppelin guy?
Oh, huge Zeppelin guy.
You're huge? Okay, so yeah. Let's start the conversation off the book there.
Okay.
I'm a Beatles guy, as you know.
Right.
I like The Who.
Love
Never
you.
Got into Zeppelin.
Really?
Can respect it.
Okay.
Understand their place in rock history.
Doesn't move you on a marrow level.
I don't connect.
Got it.
Why does it connect with you?
It a lot of different reasons. Much of it is time and place. I've got two older brothers, and the oldest, John, managed to sort of pave the way for a lot of the rock and roll that I got into. You know, just being, you know,
love it.
4 years older, you know, he brought all the stuff in the house first, you know, and and Zeppelin was that. And I grew up in a time when in New York City you had not one but two dedicated rock stations, you know, and it was WPLJ and WNEW. And I mean, it's to me, that is sort of, you know, my wife Jackie and I always joke around, it's giant guitar music. It's like you need like a step stool to reach the whole guitar because it's so big.
And a huge stack of amps.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But what I loved about them, and there's no... there's very little air between my love of Zeppelin and my love of Tolkien, for example, because they love Tolkien.
Yes.
You know, and they sing about Tolkien characters, and they sing about, you know, things that take place in that world. So when I began to discover Tolkien, I'd already had, like, this love of Zeppelin. It's like, this is all coming together at once, you know.
It's together in musical form.
And it makes me feel like I'm rocking. Yeah. It's funny, my boy, who's seven... Yeah. You know, I would say probably the and maybe the listeners can you know, weigh in on this, but it, to me, the Zeppelin song for children is The Immigrant Song.
Okay.
Most recently in Thor Ragnarok. Right. And, it's used twice in Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah.
And it blew the back of my son's skull off, you know, and it was just like, this is great.
What is this?
Right. So every time we're in the car and we're driving, we're always listening to music, always curating the music, always trying to get the guy on the good foot.
Yes.
And so, of course, every third song, hey, Dad, can you put Immigrant Song back on? I'm like, why, yes, son, I can.
Yes, son, I can.
I'll happily do so. We were heading up to Big Bear for spring break last week. And and so I was just DJing our way up the mountain. And I was like, we'll listen to things other than Immigrant Song. And so we were just rocking heavily.
Deeper cuts, you know?
You know. And one thing he's not heard yet is Stairway to Heaven because, you know, that song got ruined for me just by, you know, being played ad nauseum.
I mean, in my old radio station, if we got caught playing it, it was a $95.30 fine.
As it should be. I would make that a $96. I'd just, like, round it off. But Zeppelin is great. It's, you know... The sound, the scope, the belly
it's
of
big
it.
Too,
it's,
but it's
really big.
Intimate at the same time.
And it's to me, it's just good old rock and roll.
Yeah,
you know, and that's why I love Zeppelin. You know,
I mean, like I said, I totally get it. I've had a lot of people in my life who are very close to me, and so you start listening to their music, and Zeppelin's part of it,
right?
And I mean, again, I totally recognize their place in the scope.
Right.
You know, it's not like Zeppelin sucks. I'm like, no, I get it.
Right.
I get it.
But they're not one of your passion points.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I attach a lot to that band. Like, you know, there's a song off Zeppelin II called Thank You, and it's sort of a, you know, a ballad, you know.
Right.
If the sun refused to shine.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, I just broke up with my sophomore year girlfriend or whatever, you know, or it's like, you know, some of your first early makeouts are done to a song
that.
So there's a lot of, you know, ingrained memory.
Absolutely. You know, like, I'm the Beatles guy, as you know,
right.
But like, even more specifically, Harrison, George Harrison's solo music ties to a lot of moments in my life.
Right.
I hear it and I immediately go back. What is life? I know where I was when I was really first connecting to that song.
It's fascinating, isn't it? How that sort of anchors itself to you know.
It's in there.
What is it about Harrison for you?
For Harrison, it's a great question because by sixth grade, this is at 1987, for me, I became such a giant Beatles fan, like organically stumbled onto my friend Sean. I've told some of the stories on Knapsack Files. My friend Sean, we were camping out at a birthday party,
right.
And he's like, pulled out a cassette tape and literally was like you're doing with your son, or a scene from Almost Famous, you know, Zooey Deschanel's character passing it on to Patrick Fugit's character. Right. Oh, here's a cassette of this tape called The Beatles. And you'd heard about it. You know, there's The Beatles. My mom and dad kind of liked it, but when they went through a Jesus Revolution in the 70s, and so they kind of didn't listen to a lot of popular music. My first concert was Debbie Boone, You Light Up My
Life.
There
you go.
Right?
There you go.
So, yeah, then it came to me, and so there's just something magical and mysterious about it, just like that movie. And I just kind of connected to it. So finding Harrison, I think for a long time I was a Lennon guy, and then you kind of McCartney. I know some Ringos, but I wasn't a Ringo guy, but I do love.
Let's be fair. I mean, God bless him.
Yeah, but he's Ringo, man. Right. Great, I think perhaps the better actor of the bunch, you know, his turn in Hard Day's Night, all that stuff.
Caveman, of course.
I just think there was something about Harrison and the fact that this quiet guy didn't get a lot of songs on, but when he got these songs on, they were home runs to me.
Right.
Something was early on one of my favorite songs.
It's a great song.
Even though I didn't know Love at the time.
No.
Yeah. Sinatra calls it the greatest love song of all time.
Have you heard his version?
I have heard his version.
That's great.
Yeah.
I used to have a fairly decent version of his an impersonation. What was it? You're asking me, should my love grow? I don't know. I don't know.
Zippity big da.
Yeah. You stick around, Jack. It may show.
But you can sing, man. You can sing like Sinatra. But I think it was when I got into, once you go beyond the Beatles, what happened after April 10th, 1970? What happened after that?
Right.
And here comes All Things Must Pass with that triple album. And there's just song after song after song that sounds great. It's a Beatle, man. It's a Beatle writing songs. But there was just something about the spirit there.
Yeah.
And his spiritual side and his quiet side that I connected with.
And I remember the show for Bangladesh I remember that as it was, I don't know if 73 or whatever it was. But I remember, I think this is when our slight age difference.
Yes.
Comes in terms of
slight.
Pop culture.
Yeah.
We're both young. I'm 20 years older than you, Ken. No. I've always loved him. Did you end up liking Traveling Wilburys as a result?
Love Traveling Wilburys. In fact, I just watched, I mentioned them on another broadcast and some fan, I got to start writing this stuff down and giving people more credit. He tweeted me, I'd never seen it. It's like a 25-minute documentary, and it's on YouTube right now. I don't know where it was originally aired. And it's the story of them recording that first album.
Right.
It's a full-on doc. Harrison had some stuff shot.
Right.
I think he knew about documenting things for history.
Sure, sure. And having been, at a time, one of the most famous men in the world.
Yeah. Been in airports, terrorized, sent to meetings, hypnotized, overexposed, commercialized. Handle me with care. Yeah, and there's interviews with Roy Orbison before he passed away. Mm-hmm. And Petty, of course, now he's not no longer with us.
There's only one left.
Jeff Lynne. Dylan.
Dylan, Bob. I'm sorry. I keep forgetting that. Yeah. Sorry, Mr. Zimmerman and fans.
So, yeah, definitely. That first album's deep. That's a good album. Yeah.
And I remember it was such a phenomenon when it came out. It was such a thing, you know, and because it was a super group.
It absolutely was.
You know?
Yeah, you got Beatle, you got Dylan, Tom Petty.
Orbison,
bringing Orbison back into the fold.
Right, the ELO guy.
Jeff Lynne, ELO. Even Jim Keltner did some drumming there. Mm-hmm. Keltner, one of the best drummers of the 70s in the day. In fact, going toe-to-toe with Ringo at the concert for Bangladesh.
That's great. What's funny, you know, back to the ideas of music that we love and groups that we love. And on that trip up the mountain last week to Big Bear, sounds so biblical. On the trip up the mountain we went.
On the trip up the mountain.
My wife was saying, you know, what her... like who kind of falls in her top five of bands, and because we're talking with our boy about it, and he's like, "Yeah, Jack's like, you know, Led Zeppelin is the best."
I love these 7-year-olds. Like, well, Zeppelin, Zeppelin,
because of Immigrant Song. Yeah. For nothing else, that's great. Yeah, I can get behind that.
Yeah.
What you're saying, like, you know, in our sort of wheelhouse, it's you know, Zeppelin, the Rolling Stones, are huge and huge in our house.
Yeah.
And like the Beatles, we've talked offline about this. You know, I had my Beatles phase earlier on, and then I sort of fell away. It's nothing against them. It was so much
didn't stick
repetition in a lot of ways, and it was I just sort of all of a sudden I started to get into other types of music.
Yeah,
and you know, like I'm sure I'll come back to it. You know,
I think part of the problem too is the Beatles are so good at writing pop songs. So if you want to go beyond 3 minutes, you know, especially in the early days, they're very much
of their time. They created their own time, created their own history, right. But they're very much of the of their time a lot.
Right.
The early 60s.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. Did you happen to notice the other day, as of this recording, I guess it's a few days ago, the march that, March for Our Lives, it was called.
Yeah.
And Paul McCartney was part of the New York one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was interesting. I'd never heard him, I don't recall ever having heard him speak about Lennon in this way. And he said, you know, a good friend of one of my best friends was killed by gun violence not far from where I'm standing. He was on the Upper East Side.
Whatever.
And it's just it was interesting to hear that and to see him there in that context.
He doesn't, they go into it, you know, I think in the Beatles anthology documentary, I think they obviously go into that kind of stuff. I believe he's spoken on it before, but you're right. He's very close guarded about it. And McCartney is a notorious, the day that Lennon died, he went into the studio. And it's like people around him were kind of like, what's going on, Paul? Like your best friend, John's got shot. And he's like, no, lay down the track. Because he's that type of like, no, we got work to do.
And there may have been some shock involved. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. No, he says that's what he does.
Yeah, that's
what he does.
And it reminds me of another showbiz story that involves tragedy.
Yeah.
Lou Costello of Abbott and Costello fame, from our younger viewers, one of the great comedy teams of all time. Right. And Lou Costello tragically lost his son, who was a baby, who drowned in the family pool. He went on the air that afternoon and did his show.
Yeah.
After it had happened.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. It's like, A, is it insane work ethic or is it just shock?
Shock.
You know, but.
My uncle died on the day, May 12th, 2012. Hmm. I was driving to my first ever wrestling match that I was going to be in. I was going to wrestle.
Nice.
I'd managed, I booked, and I ran this Millennium Pro Wrestling with my friend Paul and Dan and all these nice folks. I said nice quotations because it's pro wrestling.
Right.
That was my uncle died, and he was the one who helped foster my pro wrestling love. My dad did too, but he always had a 1980s WWF figure of Nikolai Volkov because we're Russian, and I have another one. It was given to me as a gift, and I have that on my office desk at work for a long time. He had that. Anyways, long story short, he was very supportive of me in LA. One of the reasons I was able to stay in here because of his help. And he had some health problems, and we had one of those things where you just don't talk to someone, you kind of lose track.
Sure.
And you get busy, 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 and he died following complications of surgery and just what was going on.
I'm sorry, pal. It's a big one.
It was tough, but I was driving. I was on the 118 to Simi Valley. We used to do those shows out in Simi Valley, and that's what happened. My dad called me, said, hey, Uncle Nick passed away, and okay. And I'm driving. I'm like, I guess I gotta turn around. But I'm like, what am I gonna do?
Right.
Sit in my house?
Right.
He loved wrestling. He wanted me to do this. He was more supportive of my career than anybody. So drove me and my friend Paul beat the crap out of each other in the ring. It was a hardcore match. I went through a table, caned him, took a leather belt to my friend.
Whoa.
He hit me in the head with a trash can. This horrible thing. And then he pinned me outside the ring. He put me through a table, jumped, put me, I was laying on a table. I say put me through a table. That's a wrestling term. And he pinned me, and we both cried in each other's arms as he pinned me because he knew what it was going through.
Hey.
And it was the best experience. The only way I would have wanted to pay respect.
You honored your uncle in a way that you might not have been able to otherwise. I mean, you honored him in a pretty tremendous way.
Sure.
That's pretty awesome.
You. Thank you.
That's great. And back to Volkov for a second. If I remember correctly, remember that this is when it was a WWF.
Yeah.
They had an album out.
Oh,
and
I do.
I think he did Karamia, if I'm not mistaken.
I think he did. Hogan had his songs.
Yep.
Hogan was a bass
player. Paul Orndorff had a song on there.
I think Coco Beware did, too.
Coco Beware.
It was, that was right at the height, man. And that explosion happened.
Yep, I remember that. And Sergeant Slaughter may have had a track on there, too.
He should have if he didn't. And then, they tried that again.
Did they really?
In the mid-90s.
Okay.
And it's hilarious. I have the album somewhere in my CD collection that's buried in my closet here. And, that was because 86, I think, was when the album came out.
Right.
And Hogan could play.
Right.
Yeah, yep. Hogan could play bass. You know, he knew the stuff. You know, famously tried for bass in Metallica, I think is the story. And they tried to. So in the mid-90s, a new generation of WWE, at the time it was still WWF, hit. And they needed to build new stars. They must have gone back to that well. So there is a great album that has Macho Man Randy Savage like rapping, and he later on would release an actual album, I think later on his own. And I love Savage, but that's him doing the Tower Power, too sweet to be sour, funky like a monkey. Ooh, yeah. But there was a ballad, a love ballad from Bret Hart. Bret the Hitman Hart. That's him, like, not singing, but it's talking.
Right.
It's like, oh, I love you. I walk through the fires for you, baby. Right. And it's hilariously bad.
I love it.
Go back to the well.
No, it's hard to, isn't it?
It absolutely is. It is. You mentioned going up to Big Bear.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I, last week at the time of this recording, this is early April now, so late March, I was at WonderCon.
Right.
And walking back, and now the first episode of This Is Life focused on walking in LA, something you and I like doing. You like doing it maybe even more than me.
My mental health depends upon it.
Right. And that's the thing is, life up and downs. You and I both have up and downs going on at times. And I was leaving WonderCon. It was a great day, but working on some stuff in my head. And I parked at my grandparents' house.
Okay.
And was like, do I Uber back? And then you do that thing, you're leaving the hotel, and you're like, I should walk to the street to make it easier for the Uber.
Right, exactly.
Get the guy here. And I said, nah, screw it, I'm going to walk.
Ah.
And so I'm texting you, and then you're up in Big Bear walking around so far you thought you got lost.
I got turned around.
What drives you to do that in the wilderness?
You know what? As you know, I'm always up for a ramble.
Yeah.
You know, and the great thing was, as you know, I sent you that screen grab of what the temperature was. And it was, mm-hmm. It was 28 degrees. And I was like, this is great. Yeah, it was like being in a winter wonderland, you know, only two hours out of L.A. And that was great, though. And I was so glad to hear that you had actually, that you were going on a ramble.
I rambled.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty great.
And I don't know who was more at risk, you from the Bears or me from local Anaheim street toughs.
Yeah, I think you were probably more at risk. Yeah. I was ready to just trip over my own feet. That's the most danger there.
But, and I find some kind of peace in that. And we talk about that's the power of walking. That's what we do. But also, you mentioned the Big Bear. I haven't gone up there in a long time. I used to go to Lake Arrowhead, actually Green Valley Lake.
Okay.
But Big Bear. Is there something that draws you to that spot?
A handful of things. It's our friends have a place up there, and they're always very generous with letting us go up there, even when they're not there, which is sort of terrific.
Like and unofficial and, Airbnb.
Yeah, and so it's become a nice escape from LA proper, which is a great city to escape from.
Yeah. Yes,
but it's cool because it gives me the things that you don't get down here, which is a little more variety of weather, and you do really feel isolated.
Yeah,
you feel every foot of those nearly 8,000 feet up that you are. You know,
yeah,
and you're at the whim of weather. You're at the whim of falling rock zones. It's definitely more than a trip to the beach.
Do you feel that the there's obviously a difference between city and nature, and you and I both like walking in the city. You're from New York. You love that. But you feel the difference when you're out there. What do you draw from that?
It depends on, I was walking that night that that we started texting. I just reached out to you. I was like, hey, I wonder how Ken's doing, and just sort of it's.
Thank you, by the way.
Not at all. But when I'm walking, it's. Can slow the brain down a little bit, which is nice.
Ah, that's the key.
Yeah.
That's what I feel. Because I was thinking about that on that walk home. Why did I do this to myself? Why did I do this? My feet are hurting. Been on the con all day. Wearing these Converse now because I'm trying to change up my shoes a little bit.
It's important. The older we get, the foot care is key.
Foot care. And I put in some insoles in there. And it's cutting into my toe and everything. I'm like, why did I do that? I could have just got an Uber.
Right.
But there was some kind of great piece in this, which is, again, why you and I talk a lot about walking in LA. But when I go back home, I intentionally go for the long walks on the beach, and I don't know what it is. Am I led to believe that there is a different connection to Mother Earth with the sounds of the ocean? I don't know. Is it just something I think? Is get existential? Do I think this is more relaxing?
Well, generally, if we think it is something, it can become that.
Oh yeah, there you go.
You know, and it's is it? Do you feel maybe like it's a recalibration, especially your home walks? Right.
Yeah, it is kind of a weird recalibration.
Yeah, it's degaussing. You know, it's sort of getting some of the static out again.
Yeah,
you know,
I worry sometimes that I get lost in the nostalgia of home.
Okay,
and wanting to not go back, but should I ever have left? And it takes me down weird roads sometimes.
Well, I mean, to the degree that you're comfortable, I mean, expand on that a little bit.
I have a tendency to go melancholy. That's probably what most of my brand is built on, even though sometimes it's not played up, but I'm tapping into it. That's the way to say it.
It's accessible to you.
It's like every stand-up comic is not as bad as you think, but they are as bad as you think.
Right.
But, I'm an entertainer, so I'm going to tell stories and sometimes play up the sad sack thing. But there's a truth to that. And so I tend to go melancholy. And so in the 20 years I've been in LA, I find every time I go home, even now, I just did it recently after I lost my job. Yep. It's like, let me go, you said it, recalibrate. Let me go figure this out. I need to get away. And there's some, I get the get away, get out of your normal routine.
Right.
But then I get up there and I walk to my old high school. And just kind of, it was late on a Saturday night. My mom, she's like, it's kind of cold. And I said, I'm going to go for the walk. And my hometown gets a little cold. Mom was right. But I ended up walking to the high school. I've been on it once before after graduation. I've been around for both reunions. And my reunions are actually fun. But to go there and to actually walk down those hallways, and I stood literally where my locker used to be. They've removed all the lockers. And I remember thinking, that 20 plus years is zipped by.
Yeah.
Who am I? Where am I? Mm. And then it's like, what if I never left? Should I have never left? You shouldn't have left. And I find this vortex.
Does it bring you into this place of self-doubt?
It does self-doubt. Yeah, okay. That's a good way to say it. Which it was weird for some, because I find some comfort in going home.
Right.
But then it's like, why did I and should I?
Now, does that level of recrimination, does it stick with you? You know, do you bring it back to the city?
By the third day, if I usually stay, I usually go up for 3 days. By the third day, I'm ready to get back home. I'm ready for traffic.
Right.
In a weird way.
Sure. Well, it's the rhythms of life. It's the things that I've often heard you speak about on the Knapsack Files too. It's the places you know, the places that you cultivate that end up being part of your life. Mm. But part of that recalibration perhaps is that questioning aspect. You know, which I think is an important detail.
Is it asking the tough questions?
Right.
You might get the answers you want or the answers you don't want, but you need to ask them.
Or even more of an awareness. It's not even a question. All of a sudden you realize you're feeling something.
You're slowing down just enough to realize this is what's going on.
Right.
Mm. I like that. That sounds smart. You are older and wiser than me, well, just a smidge.
Just a wee. But that's sort of, and again, that's, again, part of why the wonder of walking is, if you're open to it, you know, you can sort of get a sense of where you are and what you're doing, metaphorically.
It is. It's like, you know, you ride the train a lot here in town, and this town's train is certainly not New York, the subway, but it's got a little subway system.
It does. It's got an adorable subway system.
It's cute.
It is cute. And it's actually expanding.
It is. It is. And I have a lot of fun. But do you feel when you have to take the train, or you choose to take the train, you just, that slow down effect?
Yes. And also part of that for me is a sense of familiarity with where I'm from.
Right.
You know, even though it's a vastly different, like, I think the seats there are gross on the LA Metro because they're fabric. And it's like, what's trapped in there? You know?
It's like a soft toilet.
I wouldn't
want
to eat sushi off it, you know?
But off a New York subway, you're good with the sushi.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it's like today, coming here, I had an appointment downtown in LA, and being mindful of traffic and the traffic patterns. You know, it's like, hey, I'm going to go take the train to more or less Ken's neck of the woods and then go from there. And it was great. There was no traffic. And that to me is the key. You know, if you can still meet your objective and avoid traffic, then that is like a win.
Right.
And so I felt like, you know, score one for me against Los Angeles.
do you keep that score? you versus LA?
You know what? Entirely too much.
Entirely too much.
Yes.
Well, but you know, you go back to New York too. Do you feel that pull? I know you might feel the pull of New York for just where you grew up and everything, but do you feel that different energy? Does it ever pull you back?
Yeah, I definitely, like you were saying about going home to visit and to recalibrate, I certainly feel that about returning to my hometown. Mm. But I also am constantly pulled back because that's the place I really love.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's more than just nostalgia. It's where I really want to be.
Yeah, I gotcha. It's a different feel.
Yeah, it's a bit of both. But, you know, L.A. being my home, as it has been for a really long time, you do find the places that, that make you feel good.
Yeah.
You know, and you do find the places that, you know, you want to share. Like, you know, I'm still waiting for our Musso and Frank afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you keep talking about that. We got to do it.
It's great. And for those who don't know, folks, it's the cool, you know, like chop house sort of place that's been open since 1919. It's almost 100 years.
Yeah, old. Right.
Yeah, and
it's got old Hollywood vibes.
Yeah, and you go sit at the bar, and guys have worked there for 1,000 years, and it's you know, and it's right in the middle of Hollywood, you know, and I love that place, and I love taking friends there.
Yeah, we've gone to some other places. Franklin and Company.
Yeah.
Another spot we go to there.
Yep.
And I enjoyed that a lot too. It's got the vibe. But yeah, Moose and Frank's, what specific, can you tie something specific to what pulls you there? I'm fascinated by these kind of places in LA.
Okay. I think there's a smidge of the romance of Hollywood.
The old school days.
That works in my, right. And that may have never actually ever existed at all.
Right.
That sort of thing. So I think part of the magic of that place is that it elicits some of that for me. Yeah. Because, you know, you step outside and there's, you know, listen, I'm not a big fan of Hollywood proper. I think it's become a increasingly dangerous place to walk around. You know, this speaks to some of the bigger problems that we're having as far as mental health in this country.
Homeless issues.
Yeah. But you step out off the street and you go into that place, and it's not so much a time warp as it is, it's kind of womb-like, you know?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And it smells like my mom. No, but it's very cool, and you know, you can get set up a martini, and you can you know, order steak Diane, or you know, chicken fricassee, and yeah, you know, it's a very cool place that you don't have a lot of places just like it out here.
Yeah.
There's a handful in the Tam O'Shanter, which I love, you know, and the Tam is over in Atwater Village, which is not far from from my neck of the woods. And it's been open since, you know, 1922. And it's got its own lore attached. It's like where Walt Disney, you know, apparently drew Mickey for the first time on a table, you know.
That like lore attachment is interesting on those places.
Oh, yeah.
When I worked at the Farmer's Market, 3rd and Fairfax.
Yes.
You know, James Dean and his final breakfast there, all that kind of stuff. Yep. You know, I used to see Paul Mazursky and Robert Altman and those guys having breakfast.
When I was with, when I was doing MOS with
my good friend Lou Santini.
With Lou. Mazursky was there holding court.
Yeah.
You know, with the like with his gang, his wife.
Used to be a table there, yeah.
That's right.
Mazursky. There was a younger director, a guy named Greg Pritikin, who was there too. He was the young guy, the book. Fred Wolf, comedian, he would hang out there a little bit. Richard Kind, the actor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the opening of Broadway Danny Rose, where you have guys sitting in the Carnegie Deli, these aging Catskills sort of comedians all there together holding court. And it was very similar to that.
It was... I mean, a lot of these guys had earned their career, and there was Ileana Douglas would be there every now and then. There's some other people over there. There was an author. Gosh, I can't remember, David something or other. Can't remember his name. He wrote a novel. It was a fictitious accounting of this breakfast club, basically. And I tell you, and so my girlfriend at the time, her mom owned the coffee shop they'd all get coffee from right there in the corner. It was called the Coffee Corner. Still there, still
over it.
And I would look, as a security director, I had to get there like 7:30 every day. And so that's about when they'd start rolling in. And I was fascinated by 5 days a week in general, everyone from this group would go meet there every morning.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, to have that ability because you've worked hard and had a long career and you can still do that. Maybe a perk not everyone will get to experience, but I loved it. I loved watching it. I never really knew them. Mazursky and I would talk because I'd be at the counter getting coffee and he'd be joke flirting with my girlfriend at the time.
Right.
And then he'd always come to me and be like, I'm going to take her from her one day. So I had a little fun talking to Mazursky, but like Jeff Garland would be there every now and then too. But it was funny. It was just, I was fascinated by every day. This is what you need to do.
Well, right. And these people seem to have found a place that they liked.
Right.
You know, and what was the Hemingway story? A clean, well-lighted place. You know, it's this idea of no matter what your circumstance in your town or your port of call, wherever you are, to be able to find a clean, well-lighted place. In my case, I like it to be dark and dank.
But regardless, it's like me and my my cafes, my diners that are run down but are comforting.
Without a doubt, right? And that means a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm sure our listeners have it to their own degrees, wherever they are. Mm-hmm. You know, that seemed to be, you know, something that I'm always on the hunt for, you know.
New places?
Well, places where you can be comfortable.
Be comfortable.
You know, and over time, it's like, you know, I like to know if I could have friends in from out of town, for example. You want to move so and Frank. And, you know, and the bartenders know me. You know, it's like, it's cool. And that's sort of
everybody knows your name thing. Yeah.
And you know what? That's a not inconsequential line from that song from Cheers.
That's why that theme song from Cheers is one of my favorite songs of all time. The full-length version. It's pretty sad and melancholy.
The radio version.
Yeah,
where they add the extra bridge to it. Yeah. Like they did with all those. Yeah.
Yeah, back in the Golden Day of TV theme songs. It's kind of a sad song, and then there's that connection there, that Norm sitting on the same stool.
Yeah.
Well, that, that great moment where another guest is sitting there. Norm's like, hi. And she's like, well, hi, what do you do? He's like, I sit there. That's one of the great moments of that show. And that does mean something. You're right.
Yeah.
I love finding new places, but then I love making them the old ones right away.
Right. And speaking of the old ones that I've sort of come attached to again mm-hmm. recently, being a dad is Universal Studios. And we're not being sponsored by these guys. So
they're not a paid sponsor.
Right. No, neither is Musso and Frank.
But we're open to it.
We're open to it. Right. Exactly. I take my boy there a lot.
Yeah.
And we've got a, annual pass, and which is, they make you get that because it's only $10 more than the day
sure,
pass.
Yes,
but it's cool. And so pick him up from school. We've got some time, and I was saying to him the other day, we were walking around there in the rain, which was wonderful.
Oh, that's kind of theme parks in the rain are.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
It was great. And no one was there, hardly anyone was there. And I was like, I just love this place so much. I said, and every time I think of it, I think of you and Curious George is walking by us over there too. And then Beetlejuice, but it's different than Disneyland.
Yes.
It's a more manageable thing. It's also 10 minutes from my house.
Okay? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's a really kind of, it's turned into a special place, especially as my boy's knowledge of film is growing.
That's interesting.
In those very early stages. And I took him on the tour for the first time last time we were there. Because he's getting a sense of the artistry and the craftsmanship that goes into making films.
Man, he's got Zeppelin, he's got craftsmanship in filmmaking. You're crafting a good kid.
We're working on it.
Yeah,
right,
yeah, yeah.
Right. It's certainly not as obnoxious sounding in practice as it does to refer it back.
Test him at the end of the week.
Yeah, exactly.
Name Scorsese's best three films.
That's right. I said Richard Donner. Right. But to be in a place like that is neat. And because it's also sort of what LA does do very well. It feels very insulated and a hidden place unto itself, which you can find a lot of out here.
Yeah, when you're there, you're there.
Yeah.
I mean, until you go to the Overlook and you can... But, that's so interesting you say that because I don't know if anyone out there listening has had the chance to go to Universal Studios Hollywood, not the Florida one. I haven't had a chance to do that.
Me neither.
But it's right in the center... Well, not technically the center of the valley. That's actually Northridge. The center of kind of the...
It's the divide.
The divide. That's the word I was looking for. I'm glad you're here. The divide between the San Fernando Valley and Hollywood.
Right.
So just a minute each way, you're either deep in the valley or deep in Hollywood.
You got a foot on either side. And there's the Cahuenga Pass that runs through there.
The infamous Cahuenga Pass with its traffic and its alerts.
And it's very bizarre archaeological finds. As they've improved the roadway over the years, they found relics from when Mexican forces were fighting us.
Campo de Cahuenga's over there. That's the Cahuenga Pass, like you said. Yeah, and so you get up there, and even though like Disneyland, they work so hard. And Orlando, it's bigger, so it's just easier. You go there. I was surprised when I was there for Star Wars Celebration. We're taking the tour bus in with the group. We had a press event, and someone's like, "Well, we're like on Disneyland property or Disney property."
Campus.
We're like, we're still a city away from the theme park. And they're like, "Yeah, no, it's all of it." But Anaheim's a little different, though. They've done as much as they can to buy Anaheim and take it over.
Yeah.
But when you're in Disneyland, they want you to planes don't get to fly over. They block the airspace.
It's wild.
When you go on the monorail and you see Harbor Avenue there, your Harbor Boulevard, you're like, oh, gosh, there is society out here. Universal.
I hate that, by the way. It's funny. That is like the one thing that I go with my buddy Don Winston a lot. We go to Disneyland and we do it again. I try to do it differently. We take the train from Union Station.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we take Amtrak down real fast, two stops to Anaheim. And they do it so well that you're absorbed in the reality they create, you know, and the Imagineering and all that.
The
forced perspective of the building sizes. But all of a sudden, you're on that monorail, and then you just go out over harbor. It's like, I don't want to see the real world. Can't you guys put up a scrim of some kind?
I see a Prius. I see a Honda. Right. What am I doing?
Exactly.
I see a chain restaurant, hotels. Right. Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah,
So Universal can't do it as well as Disney in that sense.
No, no.
But you're right. When you're there, except for you have this overlook. And so you could put a quarter to binocular, and you can see deep into the valley, right?
Right. You can see Warner Brothers.
Everything. I still feel, though, when I'm there... And I'm doing that, even though I live there, I can literally, not a joke, see my apartment.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
From Universal, I still feel as though I'm detached from it all.
That's right. That's right. And so, it's a fascinating place because it's got the upper lot and the lower lot. And the, right. the overlook that, that Ken's talking about is sort of as you go down these really sort of insane series of escalators mm-hmm. that keep bringing you all the way down where they have
it's like a 20-minute ride.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Yeah, pretty much is. And but yeah, the views are quite something. When,
yeah.
And when we had those fires last fall, we were there one day and you could just see them off in the distance quite menacingly.
Yeah, menacingly you know. Eerie, oh, yeah. especially yeah. at night. Yeah, yeah, so I like those. But so you've... Are you? Did you create that connection to Universal because of your son? Had you had it before?
Well, I was there the first time in 1980.
Oh wow!
When I was 10, and I went okay. with my grandmother, and my godmother. We were on our way to Australia, and
just stopped over in
and we spent a few days in LA. And yeah, and I remember being in there, and I remember they had. This I think it's been repurposed as like the special effects show now, but it was right. like a castle-y sort of building where,
oh, yeah.
and it was Frankenstein and Dracula versus and Mummy versus the Incredible Hulk, you know.
I remember that.
Yeah, and they had a Battlestar Galactica.
The Battlestar Galactica
too.
One I remember.
Yeah, so I remember it really quite well. So, yeah. you know, as my little guy is you know getting older, it's interesting to see certain things sort of coming together.
Yeah,
you know? And so I had that initial attachment.
Sure.
And when my wife and I first moved here. We'd go a lot with you know whoever would come into town.
Yeah,
and it was a different you know it was a pre-child experience and hang out and drink different. Beer all day and just yeah. you know go around. So yeah, I've got definitely warm feelings to the place. Mm. You know, and now they actually have an area which is really well themed, the Harry Potter world there.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, yeah. unfortunately, like you said, you can't do it as wholly as Disneyland does.
Right,
but you've got a really nice sense of you're in a place, and from certain angles, you can't see anything else.
Yeah,
and it's fun.
That castle's so big there. It's just yeah, it's on the right on the other side of it. Is you got the Waterworld attraction,
right?
The big thing.
Which
so
I love. I'm a freak for Waterworld. I really am.
For the movie or the
no,
ride?
I saw the movie once.
So yeah.
But the ride is great.
The whole show. It's a whole stunt show.
It's great. It's the best live show in Hollywood. It's like 20 minutes long. And it replaces what had been for years
once.
The
yeah.
popular Western stunt show.
Yes.
You know, guys punching each other off of you know taking three-story
right.
falls. This is so much fun. And so you know, and it's
I,
and that
I have seen
being
it.
being a nerd and a geek, sort of fetishizing on things that I like that way.
Right.
Like my boy and I go every time we're there.
Yeah, you got to see it.
And different angles, we sit in different places. And now I've started encouraging him to talk to the performers afterwards. And,
really?
And yeah, so that's kind of nice. And it's a cool thing. It's still a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but I love
you. What's it's not so much Costner in the movie. You're just connected to the
right, to the explosions and you know, and guys getting punched off of a, you know, a 50-story tower.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's great.
Yeah, yeah. It is like, I'm not a huge fan of those type of stunt shows. I do remember the Western one, but I've been to the Waterworld one and it's pretty intense.
Mm-hmm.
The heat off the explosions.
Exactly.
That's but so you can hear those explosions on the other side
correct.
When we're in Harry Potter.
Right.
So you're out there drinking Butterbear and like, oh, we got to put a spell on some.
Wow, that happened.
They've done a good job there. The Simpsons, new expanded Simpsons land.
I like that too.
Yeah.
I like that too.
For the Simpsons nut like me to go into, went into Moe's Tavern or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
There,
yeah.
You know,
yep.
you feel like you're there.
Eat some very healthy food.
You know. Chicken tenders.
What do you like to do when... If you have your druthers, like what's your yeah. sort of, what's your dream LA day? What do you, what like, what sort of gets you going?
A dream LA day, one that's, you know, unemployment has taught me what I really like about those type of days. And I am a big morning walk guy.
Oh, good.
Yeah. If I get a chance to do that, it's a 20-minute walk. That's all I need.
Right.
And I'll either take like an isolated walking path. That's fine, or go through the neighborhoods, especially when I was living over in Studio City. There's some nice, big, rich, fancy neighborhoods I'll never get to live in, but I can walk through them,
sure.
right? And that's kind of fun. But then I love sometimes, and maybe you as a New Yorker could understand it, and why I understand the energy of New York. I've only been there a couple times. I sometimes just need to walk on a busy street.
Yes.
Not in it, but by it.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I have a couple
of them. Is it the human contact, even the sort of incidental human contact?
It is incidental human contact because I've got my glasses on, my hat pulled low, some work up gear, and my earbuds in.
Right.
So I'm not friendly. I'm
right.
not talking to anybody. I'll
right.
smile at a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
But I just find that I'm out there in the world in a little bubble. Some music's playing in my ear.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some music going, and then that's what you. I don't want to just be on a park.
Right.
with not just the nature, but just the solitude. Right. I love my solitude, but sometimes I just need to feel like it's like that. Do you remember the video for the Verve, Richard Ashcroft's band, Bittersweet Symphony?
Yes, he's walking down the sidewalk.
Sidewalk, just hitting everybody. Right. That's what I feel like. A little less rude, a little less shoulder checking.
Right. Less shoulder checking.
But I am lost in it. And I literally put a good soundtrack, good mix on, and, because music means a lot to me as an old DJ and an old music journalist.
Absolutely.
Type. And I get lost in it, and I could be as happy as I've ever been, but I get in that mood, and a song comes on. Josh Joplin's Gang, I've Changed, is one of my favorite all-time songs, and it is a song literally about suicide. It's a suicide happening as the song is played out. It's one of the greatest songs and saddest songs.
I got to listen. I've never heard it.
Josh Joplin Group, okay. And I think I said Gang. Josh Joplin Group. He sounds a little bit, he even makes reference in songs later on in his albums that he sounds like Michael Stipe sometimes, okay. But give it a shot even if you're not an R&B fan.
I will.
But I can listen. I can be happy as a lamb.
Just
and that song comes on, I'm doing the walk, and I'm immediately back to that spot, which is kind of dangerous.
Right.
But like you said, that incidental human contact while I'm in this bubble is powerful to me.
It is powerful. And it's interesting you talk about the way a song can impact your mood. And we've sort of referenced that, things have been up and down for us.
Yeah.
Not us together. I think we're doing great.
No, we're great.
Yeah. But the idea of how do you try to put a positive on, say, if you're having a bad day. What do you do? Like, I know it's easy to say, what do you do if you want to go down a bad road? You can go out and, get hammered or something. But how do you try to...
By the way, you want to get hammered tonight?
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you turn it around for yourself?
I find there's two paths. The solitude is thing, but I love driving, and I think I got that from my father. Hardwired from my dad. He retired, and now he has a retirement job where he delivers cars for dealers. They live in the Central Coast. He'll get a job. He'll say, hey, I'm driving to LA today. And then he'll come home. So it's like a 6-hour total trip. And they'll be like, hey, you want to drive to Visalia? And he'll drive up to Visalia, pick up a car and drive it back. And that might drive some people crazy, but I'm one of those get in a car and drive type of guys.
Right.
Or folks.
Right.
I don't want to gender it. And so if I'm feeling down, I used to joke here on the Knapsack Files, and people would think it was a joke. Be like, I am going to spend tonight grabbing a sandwich from 7-Eleven and driving to downtown Burbank and crying. People would laugh,
right?
But that's what I would do. I don't recommend always eating 7-Eleven sandwiches, though I do endorse them. not officially yet. Right. I'm open 7-Eleven, but I would do that, and it wasn't. I'm not saying it's healthy, but I'd feel better. I'd purge,
right?
And you really touched on it, that incidental contact. So I'm in my car. I'm crying. I'm eating a crappy sandwich, a tasty sandwich, and maybe getting a drink or something. Not an alcoholic drink because I'm driving. But so I'm out and about. I'm part of society.
Right.
I'm obeying the rules. I'm stopping at red lights. But I'm crying about my place in life.
Sure.
I'm questioning my self-worth. But I still feel as though I'm alive and out there. I'm not home alone doing this.
That sounds like a pretty healthy approach.
I would hope.
No, it does.
I don't recommend it.
No, listen, it's easy to sort of hunker down and cave out, get into like a, a dark place.
Mm-hmm.
You can make the house into a, into a dark cave and not go anywhere,
Well, and that's why, and then the other flip side of that is I think it's important to seek out the contact of friends.
Agreed.
Whether it's a text, like you and I appreciate your text. I try to text back to you. You and I were recently at the live Schmodown event, and you and I met beforehand, and I was going through some stuff. And if anyone was at that live Schmodown event, my head was not in the right spot, but I felt good because you were there. Boom. Well, I got someone who gets it.
Right. And hey, listen, I recognized that you weren't feeling great, and I wanted to do what I could to, be a pal.
And vice versa, if you ever need
absolutely.
It,
I appreciate that, bro.
We'll go up to Big Bear.
Yeah. Well, I was about to mention that to you.
Yeah,
we should go up in a couple of weeks.
Well, I'm listening.
Yeah,
I'm listening.
I'll put up a crock pot.
A crock pot.
Yeah.
I was thinking about getting a crock pot. I've been cooking a lot.
They're awesome.
Myself.
The hilarious part about up there, though, is in action. Mm-hmm. This notion of you must adjust your recipes for altitude.
Really?
You do. It's really weird.
Explain more.
Okay. Air pressure stuff, right? So, but all of a sudden you're sitting there and you're, making scrambled eggs and you're like, wait, I've been scrambling these eggs for 10 minutes and they're not scrambling, and this water hasn't boiled in 25 minutes, and forget it, if you're going to try baking, you're
right,
done.
Done.
It's just a really weird thing. And it you walk into the grocery store
yeah.
and like the loaf of bread will be expanded. Like it looks like it's about to explode. So yeah, air pressure is weird.
So yeah, we used to go with the family. Like I said, it was a Thanksgiving tradition. My great aunt and uncle lived up there for years. They're still alive. They live in Sun Valley or some place down there. But we used to head up there, and there's that Safeway, the bottom of the hill.
Okay.
In the city.
Right. What, Redlands?
Redlands. Is that Redlands? I'm not
sure.
Depends
on which way you come down.
Yeah, so coming down from Central Coast, California, you probably hit the 210 all the way on out there. Back then, the 210 wasn't around all that way. Now that's where you go. But anyways, I know it's still there. I've looked on Google Maps because I have memories as a kid, probably about the age of your son now, of mom and dad pulling off. We had a Volkswagen van.
Right.
So pull off, and there's a Safeway there. And we'd go shopping and stock up for Thanksgiving. And then I never would think that, yeah, cooking would be different up there.
Yeah, it's a funny little thing, just an odd little, and it's kind of neat, whatever. It's just something different, you know, for someone who finds himself often getting bored in Los Angeles. It's, oh, this is different, you know. I'm easily amused.
You spend a lot of time on the walk by yourself, taking those cool photos.
Yeah. If you look back, you'll see a handful of. If you look at my my Instagram feed, you'll see a ton of from Waterworld. Just because there's an airplane that comes exploding into the side of the arena at the end, and so I try to get that from different angles.
I think that's the thing that upsets the Harry Potter ride the most is that airplane.
Right,
I forgot about that airplane.
You can't really block that out. Yeah.
Well, yeah, we're going to figure it out, man. You and I will go to Big Bear.
I love it.
I know this episode, we're not out and about. This Is Life is going to be a show that goes a lot of different spots. If we record in the altitude looking for Bigfoot up there,
oh yeah,
that might be something.
No, we'll bring the remote rig with us.
Absolutely. Sounds good. Yep. And Owen, thanks for doing the show with me.
Oh, Ken, it's my pleasure, man. Like it's always great to be with you on or off the mic, pal.
Yeah, absolutely. This is our show, guys. This is what we do here. And if you enjoy it here, keep listening. About once a month, we'll do the show for now, but you never know where this show goes. We got some stuff planned. Life got a little busy the last couple weeks.
It did.
We shifted things around a couple times where we're like, hey, I can't either. Okay, that's good. But it happened. We wanted to get together here tonight. So you can follow the Knapsack Files. You know, guys know where it is on Facebook. But I also want to talk to you about the new website. It is knapsackfiles.podomatic.net. That is a website attached to my Podomatic page. You can still find the podcast in all the other normal spots. And I'm hoping soon on Spotify. I applied to be on Spotify. I did my due diligence. I don't know if they've approved it yet, but you can find me on iHeartRadio and the iHeartRadio app, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, and of course on Podomatic as well. Let us know what you think. Use hashtag ThisIsLife. But also make sure, if you aren't already, follow Owen Mugen, right? Because you got some great photos. I want them to see.
Yeah, it's fun stuff. It's just a little tiny glimpse of what I do when I'm out and about. No selfies, though, strangely.
But it's refreshing. It's refreshing to scroll down Instagram, and I'm not opposed to selfies. I get it. A lot of us in LA, it's our part of our getting our word out, getting our face and name out there, right? But you scroll, you just go face, bikini picture, stop, look at it again, bikini picture, prescribes. Owen's walking around midnight in Hotwater Village.
And there's a Porto San that's been blown to pieces. Yeah. So not by me, but I just document what I see.
Check it out, guys. And hey, as always, today's podcast was brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/thenapsackfiles. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. You sign up, you get that, and it helps support the show. Don't forget, you can also support us on Patreon, patreon.com/thenapsackfiles, where the show 5 Extra Minutes happens every week, and you'll hear 5 more minutes with me and Owen. That's it for this week on the Knapsack Files podcast feed. That's Owen, I'm Ken, and this is Life.